This week, we have a terrific guest for you. I was so thrilled to learn the father of our guest worked on the lunar module that took men to the moon. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. And it makes sense that she became fascinated with the thought of going to space because honestly, I would too. I would be peppering my father with questions constantly. But since she hasn't found her way to the stars yet, she instead journeys to strange world through her writing, which is great for us because, we get to read it out. Her works include the award-winning Evolution Revolution trilogy, Simple Machines, Simple Plans, and Simple Lessons. She co-authored Blonde Ops and the Siren series, Sirens and Sirens Are Back in Fashion. She contributed to the anthology Beware the Little White Rabbit, which was entered for the Bram Stoker Award. She also writes for fundraising horror anthology ebook Scare Me to Sleep, which, okay, just the title alone scares me. And that was done so they could donate books to kids. She's given writing presentations and workshops for the New Jersey version of SCBWI, conferences in libraries, at schools, and book festivals. And she loves to chat about anything book related with her readers, which is great because I love to communicate with writers, even if it's on like X or on Instagram, which is great. She lives in New Jersey with her husband and a floofy black cat. Please welcome to her podcast, Charlotte Bernardo. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, my pleasure.
Is there anything that you would like to add or tell our listeners and viewers about yourself?
Originally, when we moved to New Jersey because of my husband's job, so I used to tell everyone that I was a captive in New Jersey because I didn't want to move here originally. But, it's all worked out. There's a lot of great writing conferences and colleagues. I met a lot of people. And when I got to New Jersey is when I really got serious about my writing. We had two kids. I'd put them in the sandbox and then I'd write. That's where I got the idea for Evolution Revolution. My boys are playing in the sandbox and we had the squirrel who would always come visit. So I would put out bananas and nuts for it. And that squirrel he was really smart. He'd come up to the door. He wasn't afraid of my cats behind the glass. And he always knew to come the same time every day. And then my son brought home his third grade science homework, which was Simple Machines. And he had to do all these little homework assignments. And I thought, you know what? These are so simple. I bet my squirrel could learn it. And that's how the whole idea started.
I love it.
That is so cool how little things just kind of work themselves into a story.
Yes, I find that the little things are what speeds my mind to think, well, what could happen here? What could I do there? What would, this person do? And that's how I usually find the ideas for my books. I'm never at a loss for ideas. I'm just at a loss of time to write them all.
That's always
really
the
hard,
problem.
especially when you have kids. Yes.
Yes, definitely. So when did all this start? So you said when you moved to New Jersey, you really got serious about your writing, but when did you kind of know, this writing bug, I'm really addicted to this writing thing. And when did you start writing?
Well, it's funny because my parents never read to me when I was young that we all do to our kids now. And a lot of people like horrified, but even though my parents are avid readers themselves, but like it's a really weird example. We went to a drive-in theater when I was young and we were playing on the swings. Then the lights went off. We had to go back to the car. The movie was going to start. And my father said, "Close the door. Someone's going to take it off." And I'm like, "Why would they take it off?" He says, "They're going to take it off. Close the door." And it occurred to me, he meant close the door because another car could come by, hit it, and rip it off. Not that someone would come and take it
Okay.
off. And then, I started listening to, and people said, "Well, what did they mean? Did they mean this or that?" And I don't know, it started my wheels turning. And after that, I really got into reading and I would spend hours and hours reading, a bit younger than sixth grade, Then after that, I was like, well, I could write a story. And I started writing really bad poetry, really bad stories. I look at them now and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I think we all have at least one story that we just, it's in our drawer and that's a good place for it. But I love that story because I think a lot of us writers, like we listen to what people are saying or we observe a little bit differently maybe than other people. So for you to have listened to that and said like, oh, what he meant is, and that started everything. I think that's cool. Like, I think that's really cool that, because words mean so much,
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because my favorite book growing up is a book called Beautiful Joe by Marshall Saunders. This woman wrote the book from the point of view of the dog. And I was like, what? The dog is talking? He's telling a story? And I was just like, from there, my imagination just exploded. Well, if a dog could tell the story, you know, what about an ant or a dragon or whatever? So, you know, that also helps spark.
Absolutely. So did you know right away that you wanted to write? Because obviously, when you're a little younger, you tend to write stories for your age group. But did you know always that you wanted to write? Because you've written books for children mostly right now, right? Like YA and MG. Is that what you really, like, that's what called to you right from the start?
Originally, I think because my dad was so scientifically minded, I wanted to be the next Barbara Walters.
Oh, that's but
I
a
went
great
to school
dream.
For journalism. Oh, then I got a job as a, you know, cub reporter. And it was either, do I eat tonight or do I put gas in the car to do my job?
Oh.
You know, and there was so much politics in this. It was a small town paper and so much backstabbing. I said, you know, I don't want to live like this. Mm-hmm. So then that's when I moved to fiction.
Okay.
But I still did, like, every once in a while, I would do a nonfiction article and stuff like that.
Okay. And when you started fiction, did you right away go into speculative fiction with like the science fiction and the fantasy and all of that?
Yes, I did go right into spec fic. My first book is about a dampier. And for people who don't know, a dampier is a person who has been bitten by a vampire, but they haven't fully turned.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So in my book, if he gets any type of blood, then he will turn.
Okay.
He has the long life. And he has, like, you know, the thirst, but he hasn't turned yet. So obviously he's a complete vegetarian.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. I like that premise. Yeah. That's hard. I'm betting there's some issues there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he meets up with a witch and they're going after a serial killer. So there's a lot of other things going on. But that was my first. It's still sitting in my drawer. I look at it every once in a while, but I'll revisit it again.
Okay, yeah, so you never did finish that book, or did you finish it and just not try and?
No, I finished it and I've revised it about 3 times. But now, after, you know, some more experience, after publishing my other books and finishing my MFA, I'm going to go back and just, like, rip it to shreds and stuff, you know.
That sounds
I like
good.
The premise too much to give it up.
No,
yeah,
how
it's
old...
a really, really good premise.
It really, truly is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially, like, vampires are a little bit back in style right now. So it's kind of very cool. But how old were you? Like, when was this all happening? This book that you...
I wrote this book on my lunch hours when I was a paralegal, right after we moved to New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought for a while I'd go to law school, but after working with lawyers, I decided, nah.
Not happening. So Shakespeare was right?
Yeah. So
we get rid of the lawyers, right?
So I wrote it on my lunch hour. It took me a year.
Oh, wow. And did you have to do a lot of research for that one?
Yeah. You know, but not as much as I do now. Now, you know, experience has taught me you have to get the little things right, too. You know, because I've read books where writers didn't do their research. And, like, there's one very famous author, she has her character drop, like, this huge heart-shaped emerald on the floor during a burglary. And if you drop an emerald on the floor, it will shatter.
Oh.
It's not hard like a diamond. So right there, then I said, no, there's no 15-year-old girl that can make her way to Russia, steal a Monet from some mansion and get away with it. No. It's easier to believe in aliens.
That's true.
Well, yes. No, I agree with that. But because me and Angie have this thing for, like, shelved books. So did you try at the time to get an agent from it or to query it? Or did you know right away, I want to go on to something else?
No, I tried getting an agent and getting an editor. But, like, from the feedback that I got, I realized it was too rough.
Got
so
it.
That I became a member of the SCBWI. And I started going to conferences and workshops.
Nice.
I started my own critique group.
Nice.
Which I had for a number of years and, you know, just got more experience under my belt and, you know, broadened my knowledge. All right. You know, this query letter really sucks. No wonder they didn't want to look at the book.
Queries are a monster. Query letters.
Yeah. That's a killer. Yeah,
definitely. And then you went on to write some books with a partner. So how did that come about?
Well, Natalie was in my critique group.
Okay. Oh, nice.
So we decided, you know, Twilight came out and we're like, write a vampire story. The bookstore, and there were so many. So, and you know what? You realize you're going to be fight so many people. So then we decided on Greek mythology because Percy Jackson was hot.
Okay.
And we're like, but that's, girls will read it, but that's from a boy's point of view. We wanted it from a girl's point of view. So then that's how we came up for the, you know, the two girls who are college, high school students, and they don't really like each other, but they're forced to be, roommates and colleagues. And, you know, they end up getting into trouble all over a pair of shoes. Fight starts. So,
do you have the book with you?
Yes, that's this one, Sirens.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
See, that's why the shoes on the cover. It all starts over a pair of killer red heels.
Oh, that's fun.
That could happen with girls, you know.
Right?
Yeah. So, then we worked together on that. And then we, after we got an offer from Flux Publishers, then we found an agent. And then she worked out a deal for the second and third book to be published. But some politics, between the agent and the house and us, and they would only do the second book. They wouldn't do the third one. So after the second book, we realized that, you know, we were no longer welcome. Mm-hmm. We, our agent found us this work for hire through Macmillan. Mm-hmm. And it was the Blonde Ops. They gave us the premise with a hacker girl. And, you know, so in 6 weeks, we had to rough out the entire book.
Wow.
We worked like dogs. So we roughed it out. We made changes. They came back, changed this. We want this. Don't like that. And I think we had 2 months to polish it up. So we did it. And then they said, okay, we love it. And then they published it.
That's so cool. But okay, now I'm curious, how did that work out? Like, did one person do one chapter and then the next? Like, how did you have two POVs? How did all this work out for you?
Well, like in Sirens was different from Blonde Ops because Sirens had two main characters. Okay. So she would take ownership of one and I would take ownership of the other. We planned out the book and then we decided that, all right, the chapters alternated. So I started with mine and, introduce hers. Then when she did her chapter, you know, if it was my character and I said, no, my character wouldn't do that. She wouldn't wear Crocs. I mean, really, plastic shoes. So I would change that. And then when I did my chapter, she says, no, my character is not going to wear, you know, the double earring. She's a down to earth, you know, kind of girl. So I said, okay, so that's how we kept each other in check. And that's how we kept the voices different.
Nice.
Okay, so, but with Blonde Ops, there's only one main character. Yeah. So we agreed that since I loved the writing and she loved the revision, I would write it. She would revise and come and change it because we already had the basic outline to follow. So right. It wasn't that hard. But, you know, then we decided that this is going to sound gross, but it's called the tampon box rule. There was one scene where her character is taking off this expensive, the character was taking off this expensive hosiery.
Okay.
And she hated it. I said, no, that's gross. Putting it in a tampon box. So she says, well, I like it. And we couldn't agree. So I said, all right, leave it in. But if the editor says she hates it, it comes out. And Natalie agreed. Editor hated it. I won. So ever since then, if we didn't agree, the editor had the final say and we weren't going to argue it.
I love it.
Good. That kept the peace then.
It did. It did.
And so was that the only book in that series or were there other books in that series?
No, just the Blonde Ops. After that, there was a lot of changes going around. The agent doesn't represent me anymore. I don't know if she represents Natalie because unfortunately life happens and we don't talk to each other anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That happens. You know, you move on to different places and spaces. Yeah. And, you know, she was more into writing new age stuff and I was more into spec fic and, you know.
Yeah. And it's hard when you don't have like, because I've had a creative partner before where we both wrote fantasy in the beginning and spec fic. And then later on, she kind of changed to contemporary and I'm not really into contemporary. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you try and, you know, just see, you know, mesh in that way. But I mean, it's hard when you don't enjoy the particular genre, you know, or
yeah.
It is hard when it's, yeah, so it's.
And added to that, writing is very personal, you know, like it's so deeply personal that, Yeah, like, and I think we're in the end, we're all artists and we all have our feelings, and it happens. And it happens not just with writing, it happens in every domain, every workplace, everything. Yeah. So it happens. But at least you got some three very good books with that person, and that's what matters, right?
Yeah. I'm happy. So in the meantime, now I'm looking for a new agent, and I'm subbing. I have my thesis novel from my MFA is out on sub.
Okay. That's what we want to talk about with you, though. Yeah. Like, so where did the idea of an MFA come, and how did you go about it? And tell us some details, because that's very exciting.
Well, I've always wanted to do it, you know, but I have several college degrees. I couldn't make up my mind. First, it was journalism. Then it was paralegal. Then it was English. And then, you know, when I really started to get serious about my writing, I figured, you know, I would always wanted to get an MFA or a master's. So now that boys were older and they didn't need me anymore, you know, off doing their own things, this is the time to do it. Right. So I applied to Southern New Hampshire University. And I know people see the commercials on TV and they figured, oh, it's just a poo-poo college. Let me tell you, they have excellent staff. Beth Rivas is on staff.
Okay? That's so cool.
Oh, yes, yeah, she's so lovely.
There's a lot of well-known writers. My thesis professor writes for Disney besides her own projects. Nice. And, you know, it's not a piece of cake. It's not like you can just sub in. You have to do a lot of work and you have to be serious. If you're not serious, you think it's just going to be poo-poo. Then don't bother. Mm-hmm. And I found out later on after I graduated that they don't accept everyone. Like for undergraduate, they'll accept pretty much anyone, but you have to prove yourself. For the MFA, they like, I know people have tried 3-4 times to get in.
Oh, wow.
So it's not the piece of cake that everyone thinks it is. It's a lot of work, but you know what? Once you get into the groove, and if you like to write, you're okay. If you don't like to write, you know, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you, and what kind of classes were you taking?
It took me 18 months because I took 2 classes per term, and terms are 10 weeks long. You get a week off and then 10 weeks. So the things that they had me do was like not only read and compare and analyze classic literature, but a modern day book. Then I took a class in marketing, social media marketing. I had a class in setting up your own business if you wanted to do copy editing or figuring out how to set up your author business. There was such a wide range of classes. It wasn't all just writing. Plus, during this time, you're working on your thesis novel. Okay. And they're showing you how to edit, how to outline, saying, you know, don't just, unfortunately, sorry, Stephen King, but you're wrong. You can't just sit down and bang out a novel. Maybe he can, but for most of us, if you know where you're going, yep, it makes it easier. And it's like, I followed that when I did NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. You can write a novel in a month. It's easier if you know what the next chapter is going to be about.
Right.
So,
and especially since it's such a short period of time too. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
definitely.
Yes, you know, so I learned little tricks like that.
I love the fact that it had the business component as well in marketing, because that's one of the things that you don't realize when you write the book, that, okay, you want to sell it and you want people to buy it. And it's not that easy to find people who even know who you are in the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and marketing, that was one of the hard things that I had.
Yeah, one of the classes was setting up an author website.
Fantastic, though.
You know, amazing. So they gave you all the tools. If you don't use them, well, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Right.
But it also helped me get in good habits, and it expanded that. Not only am I writing novels, but I'm also going back now to short story writing. Right. That was one of the classes. So, and I've rediscovered my love of, you know, the short little gotcha story. So for every Friday, that's another thing they showed you how to work within a routine. Every Friday is short story day. I research markets, I revise and write short stories only. The rest of the week is for my novels.
Oh, Charlotte, that's fantastic. I love what they've done to you. This is great. We should all do this. Like, that's fantastic. Plus, like Angie said, like the fact that they give you the business, but I'm super curious. So what's the one thing, like if you could say there's one thing that the MFA gave you for writing, like writing technique or writing or editing technique or something, like what's the most important thing that you took out of that?
I would have to say that it was the way I set up starting a novel. You know, I have my basic premise, and then I expand that a little bit more, and then I sit down and I plot out the book. Sitting down, doing that, spending that time initially, rather than, oh, I got this great idea, let me just write, that made me more efficient. That made me, I got more done in less time. And I had better results.
Nice, nice. Because before you would have called yourself a pantser.
Yeah. Oh yes. Oh, man, this great idea. I'm just going to throw this and this, and then you're like, and then I'm reading. Well, it went off the track over here, or this doesn't match with this, and it made a horror show. Because then you have to go back to the beginning and, you know, try to figure out where you went wrong. But if you follow the outline, even though I didn't have to stick with the outline, when I did my thesis revision with my professor, she says, well, what about this? And I'm like, oh, shoot, I could go back to this. But because I had the outline, I could go back to that chapter. I knew where I had to fix it. So that makes it so much simpler.
Well, we'll continue this fight, Angie and I, because I'm a crazy outliner and Angie is a crazy pantser and never the two shall meet. But
I try to outline.
I try. And I find pantsing for something, and I'm sure you would agree, Charlotte, that sometimes while you're even with an outline, while you're writing, sometimes you have like this brilliant, or your character decides it's going to do this instead or something, and you say like that's worth exploring a little bit, you know. And for me, that's very cool, but it's so impressive to me that Angie, the whole time Angie's writing, that's what's going on in her head. So it's amazing to me. It's the two are crazy.
People can do it.
I know some people can do it, and the outline doesn't work. So it's all good to me. However you end up writing your book, I'm so happy.
As long as you finish your book, that's
exactly
yes. what you want.
That's exactly right.
Because you can't always edit it. I mean, that's the way you write.
Well, that's exactly
it. I think involved if you know what you're doing and you don't have to go back and fix everything. But in the end, if you end up with a book you're happy with, then the way you get there is, you know, is individual and up to you. So, but and yeah, we'll make it easier.
Found out that like I had my outline, but like it's just two or three sentences per chapter. Mm-hmm. And if something comes to me out of the blue, I'll sit and I'll write that scene out. And then I'll say, can I fit it into the outline, or how can I change the outline to fit this in? Because it's really great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do have my moments of panstering.
Exactly.
I love that you figured out how to make the outline work for you in a way that still keeps your creativity, the pantser creativity, where you can still use that. And yes. And it didn't stifle you in any way. Because, you know, I think if you can't figure out how to make it work, then it just kind of keeps you from moving forward sometimes, like at least for me. Like I kept trying to make an outline. I kept trying to do that. And because, you know, when you're on submission and, you know, your agent says, hey, what do you want to do next? And you have to kind of do an outline and say, here's what's, that's hard. It's like, you know, I have really had a hard time with that. I did it, you know, but I started writing the book and then I realized, I couldn't stick with that outline. It just kind of flowed in a different direction. But yeah.
See, I think that was what was good about the MFA is that you started out with a basic outline, you know, introduction, conflict, you know, just the main points that you learned in high school. Here's the climax, here's the resolution. And then in the next class, you had to add a little bit more different plot points. Nice. And they slowly carried you along, you know, guided you along to get more and more in depth. And then by the time I got to my thesis classes, I had an in-depth outline, what they call reverse outline. Your book is drafted. Now we all know it's rough. Now do the outline and see. This way you can say, all right, you know what? They went off the rails over here. So I can go back to chapter 4 and do that. So that I think helped too.
That's fascinating. I love that idea. Yeah.
Actually, that's even a great way for you, Angie, you know, like when you finish your book and then try to fit all the plot points and see where you, like, I mean, I think that might actually work.
That's I tend to write my outline after I write the book.
So there, that's exactly.
Weird, yes.
So that's exactly what you're doing. But Charlotte, when they showed you how to outline, did they, you know, like how there's so many books out there for outlining, like there's 15 steps, there's 22 steps, did they ask you to pick one or did they have their own? Or if you were already using one, would they allow you to do that? Or?
Well, in the first couple of classes, when they introduced the outline, you had to follow their guidelines. because they kept it very simple, short, to the point.
Got it.
Then as the next classes, they had books where we read that showed how this person outlines. And one, I was totally like, no. And then there's another one that I said, well, this one works a little bit better because it's just the basics. I don't want to write these scenes that are so with all the minutiae in it before I moved on to the next one. I like to have the basics down. And then I like to go back and fluff it out. Okay. You know?
Perfect. Now for your, they ask you to write obviously a book for your thesis. So how did you pick what you wanted to write and what did you write?
Well, I had an idea what I wanted. When you apply to the program, you have to have an idea of what your thesis novel is going to be. You can change it if something comes up. But I had this idea. I went to the Renaissance Fair in New York and I saw this guy doing, you know, he was a blacksmith and he had all these beautiful knives and swords that he made. And I thought I wanted to write a story about a blacksmith. And then I thought, what was the worst thing a blacksmith can do? He can break off a piece of Excalibur, sharpening it for Arthur.
Oh,
that's so cool.
So he breaks off a shard and he's like, I have to return this. But he nicks his finger and as he's saying words, I have to return this to Arthur. Arthur goes off to battle. He rushes away and he's killed at Camlann by Mordred. So now Whiston, that's the blacksmith, has made a blood vow to return this. The magic throws him into current day England, which is on the brink of civil war. The people who want to abolish the monarchy and the people who want to keep it. And he doesn't know how, if there's no king, what does he do with this magical piece? Which he's hidden in a old Roman coin to keep it safe. And he ends up in another Renaissance fair, in a Renaissance fair, and he meets these people who are Arthur enthusiasts. And one of them is a witch, Anna, who turns out to be Morgana.
Anna.
She's been using magic to hop through time, trying to find Excalibur because Excalibur was thrown into the lake after Arthur was taken off to Avalon. So now Whiston has a choice if he can help Anna find the sword because she wants to claim the throne and the sword. But then he realizes that the sword wants to find the last true heir of Arthur. Arthur had descendants.
Oh.
So he runs into this little bank teller and guess who she is?
Oh, that's so cool.
Arthur's last descendant.
Oh, that is such a great, so great. That's such a great
thing. I love that.
It's called the Excalibur Vow. So it's out on sub. So it was a lot of fun because I got fantasy. I got, witches. I have contemporary in there. I have time travel. There's a love interest and, you know, so it's. So
is this a young adult or is this adult?
This is young adult because the blacksmith is like 17 years old.
Okay. I love that. That is such a cool. It's like a spec fic writer's greatest dream, you know, like you've got a whole bunch of little things in there. I love it.
Yeah. And that it's not just in the past, but it moves to the future. And I love those. I love when it's just not one thing, when a book isn't just one thing where you can kind of like branch out and do, you know, pretty much let your imagination go where it wants to go, which is really fun.
I really like
it. And it's funny because the king that's currently on the throne is England. I modeled him after Prince Charles, who I don't like.
I love that.
So he's an evil villain.
That's very cool. I really like that. Now, during the MFA, you're writing this. Are they also helping you with query and synopsis and all of that?
Oh, yes. We have, for our final thesis project, we had to have the book and has to have at least had one revision.
Okay.
We had to have a query letter. We had to have a synopsis and we had to have a chapter outline.
Yeah, and so I imagine really when you are writing the query letter and stuff, you're kind of, they teach you how to get the hook and all, you know, all the components that make up how to write a query letter too. It kind of teaches you how to do that.
Yeah. Like we saw, we read about how to write the query letter. They, you know, there's a lot of articles that you read of what to include, what not to include. Here's some good examples. Then we would draft it. And then the class would each critique it, saying, well, this or that. And, you know, some people have different ideas. So you have to say, well, that won't work because my query letter will be 10,000 words long. You know, and then this is a good idea. I should mention, you know, Anna's name. She's the witch. And so then you do several revisions of that. And then the thesis professor looks at it and she gives her critique, and you have one last opportunity to polish it up. And that's basically the query letter that I'm going with.
I love that. That's fantastic.
Besides the query letter, the synopsis, the outline, the novel, you also have to do a pitch, like a 5-sentence pitch, and you have to do the text for the back cover or the inside cover where you just give the blurb. So
yeah, I know, everything. MFA sounds better and better.
Yeah, because I mean, basically it takes you through the entire process, it sounds like.
It does.
It teaches you how to be an author, which is fantastic, I think. Like, it's great because even the marketing aspect of it, you know? So,
and then there's even a class where they discuss traditional versus independent publishing and tell you how to choose, based on, so they have you do the research to find out which would work better for you. So they pretty much covered everything.
I love it. It's great. Great, great, great. Thank you so much for telling us all about it and sharing your experience with it, and also your experience with writing with a co-author and how that worked. And from the beginning, I think, thank you so much. We learned so much today. My gosh.
A lot of fun. Yes.
It was a lot of fun. I'm going to switch over now, and we're going to go to a segment where we're going to learn a little bit more about you as an author. Are you ready? It's 10 questions, speed round. You can answer as much or as little as you'd like. And here is question number one. Would you rather be the driver or the passenger?
If it's a sports car, I'm driving.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it. If you could spend a day in someone else's shoes, who would that be?
I think probably my favorite author, Sherilyn Kenyon.
I would love to spend a day in an author's shoes and see how they write and how long they do it and what they're thinking. Yeah. No, I think that's really cool. If you go to a Broadway show, is it a musical or a play?
Musical.
Which part of the day do you like most?
Late morning. I've had my cup of tea and my brain is awake and I can work.
Very important. I agree. Mine would be that first coffee area is really important. Everybody in my house knows, don't talk to mom before the coffee. That's just not a good idea. Would you rather travel as much as you want or renovate your house?
Travel.
What's your favorite thing about fall?
Keep fuzzy socks.
Fuzzy socks. I love fuzzy socks. Would you rather sing like a rock star or cook like a gourmet chef?
Sing like a rock star.
It's fun. Do you have a superstition? You know, like some football players, like they have to touch the top of the door before they run out on the field or something. Like, do you have something like that?
I don't really think so. You know, I mean, you have the ones that, throw salt on your shoulder. I don't believe that. I don't really believe in superstition.
Perfect. That's a good answer. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to make your bed in the morning?
Oh, 10.
I like that. That makes me feel good.
I don't like a mess.
Yeah, I know. And when you get back to it that night, it makes me. Last question, which is so intellectual, but scary movies, yay or nay?
Depends. I was scared poopless when I saw Alien for the first time, but now it's one of my favorite horror movies because, you know, that heroine just rocked it. Ripley. Yeah.
I love it. Thank you so much for answering those. I really appreciate it. Love your answers.
Yeah, that was so much fun. So how about if you tell us a little bit about what you're working on now?
Well, while the Excalibur Vow is out on sub, I'm also subbing my fairy story set in contemporary times. When a fairy breaks one of the laws, she's kicked out. She has to be in the human realm, and she's got her and the human who she saved his life, but he's an art forger. So he's got to set his path straight, and she has to repent for what she's done before she can go back, but she's got a time limit to do it.
And so is this something that is already completed or are you currently?
Yes.
Okay.
It's going out on, it was out on sub. I got my first rejection.
Oh no.
So I'll be sending out on to other agents and editors, and I have like about 6 novels I'm working on, so while that one's out on sub, I'll start revising another one.
Okay, that's fun. I mean, it's fun being able to revisit the stories that you had like written before and maybe have been sitting for a while, and then you're like, and especially since you just finished your MFA and you kind of have some of the stories, older stories that were written before you worked on the MFA. So
yes, yeah, so now I'm going into it with fresh eyes and more knowledge, not to fix.
I love
that. Great. I love that idea. Where can they find you on the internet if they want to follow you at your journey, and especially once you sell those books, because we know you will.
Oh yeah.
I'm on Instagram and Twitter as Char Bernardo, because my name's too long to fit. So it's Char, C-H-A-R. I'm on Facebook as Charlotte Bernardo, author. I'm on Pinterest, and I just started Blue Sky.
Very cool. Trying to get onto that one. We'll have to figure that out. But thank you so much.
Also,
for...
I do have a website on WordPress.
Okay.
So, and then also I write for Smack Dab in the Middle. It's a blog about a middle grade novel, and hope to start writing soon for YA Outside the Lines. It's, you know, a blog on YA writing and books and stuff like that. But I just got back from Ecuador for my son's wedding, so I'm just trying to get back into the groove of writing and blog.
I'm assuming that was a beautiful place to visit. Was it? Did you have a lot of fun?
It was. It was wonderful. You know, went up a mountain. We were at 13,400 feet. It was just amazing. Beautiful. The people are so hospitable, and my in-laws are just wonderful.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
And I got a new book idea too.
Oh, right. Then it was all worth it. Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things, Christy, did I say, if you want to write, get out of the house.
That's right.
Yep, Ecuador, apparently. That's amazing.
Inspiration is all around.
It totally is. You just have to find it. Yeah.
I agree. Awesome. I'm totally sold on doing an MFA now, and I am super happy that you're doing so well, and you seem so happy and busy. And I think that for a writer, being busy is happiness, because if you can write in all sorts of different little things, when actually you mentioned Beth Rivas, and when we interviewed her, she was doing a little bit of self-publishing, a little bit of trad publishing, some stuff for fun, some stuff for work. And I think that that brings happiness to a writer. So good for you. Congratulations again on getting your MFA.
And thank you for sharing the process with us, because I think a lot of people have no idea what it entails. It sounds so worth it. Like, it's so worth going.
It was worth it.
Especially when you're older, like us. You're like, I don't want to go back to school. But yeah, I mean, that definitely inspired me too. So
definitely.
We're going to wrap it up, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I just want to say thank you to Charlotte for coming on the podcast and just sharing her journey with us. If you really enjoyed this episode, hit the like button. We would really appreciate it, as well as subscribe. If you want to find Charlotte, we'll have her information in the description box below. Also, we'll have the link for the giveaway so that you can win one of her books.
Give us a 5-star review if you feel like it. We like those, because then it helps us be found by other readers, listeners, and authors. So fantastic.
Okay.
And I would add to your audience that if they know of an author that would be good to let you know, so you can keep going.
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Yes.
You definitely write it in the comments or let us know. Send us an email, right? We're at angiechristyright@gmail.com. It would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Charlotte Bernardo is offering one MG book, Evolution Revolution, Simple Machines, and one YA book, Blonde Ops. Please leave a comment and or subscribe on all of our social media platforms listed in the description box. For each comment and or subscription, will act as an extra entry for the giveaway. For example, if you subscribe to our channel right now, which I know you want to do, and leave a comment, that acts as 2 entries into the giveaway, giving you a head start on anyone who only just leaves a comment. So please like, subscribe, comment for 3 entries into the giveaway. It's really pretty easy.
Thanks for having me.